Into the Weird, Episode 34, Daddy Issues.
Welcome to Into the Weird, a podcast celebrating the madness and magnificence of the mighty Marvel Bronze Age. I'm your host, Billy D, and alongside me is my co-host, Herman Lowe. How are you, buddy?
Hey, I'm great, thanks, Billy, man. I'm sitting here chilling in a, what would you call it, a tavern in the Hyborian Age, watching Conan beat up some guys here in the corner. I'm not going to participate, coward that I am. And, yeah, it's going great, man. Drinking some grog. What about you?
Yeah, I'm over in the corner as well, peeking at the lovely ladies dancing. So, ooh, you know, gonna hopefully introduce myself to them later.
Nah, Conan's going to bed all of them. He's going to take all of them. Oh, man. Dude, has any character in fiction ever had more, you know, orgies than Conan?
No, I don't think so. He's top dog.
Doubt it. I mean, even James Bond, he's not an orgy kind of guy. He's more like a one-on-one type. But Conan frequently wakes up in the bed surrounded by lovely ladies, a harem or something that he's managed to, you know, steal into. So, yeah. And later on, we've got some Conan talk. I'm going to talk a bit of Conan when we have our recommendations of Ragador. That's why I mentioned him early on. All right. Yeah, but other than that, everything's going fine. So cool. Excited for today, Mr. B, because what are we going to be discussing?
Oh, we're back to Doctor Strange. It feels like it's been a long time, but yeah, it's been, yeah, not too long, but it feels like forever. But yeah, back to the doc.
That's right. It's because, you know, last time it was back to the duck, and now it's back to the doc because, you know, we discussed Howard the Duck and, you know, two issues of Howard. There's a lot to talk about. That's why it felt so lengthy. But also, we did a lot of Patreon episodes in between our previous, you know, Doctor Strange-centric episode and this one. So I'd say about a month of doing lots of other podcasts, right, Billy? We've also got a Magazines and Monsters under our belt where we discuss some of our favorite horror movies. And with all of those podcasts, it could seem like an eternity. You know, if you want to use one of Doctor Strange's, you know, terms. I'm glad to be back talking about the doc. And it's always fun rereading these issues because, you know, Colin on art, Engelhardt's writing still pops. And this time around, we've got an old villain returning like we teased in the last episode. I mean, where are we at the moment, Billy? Last time around, it was revealed that Dormammu is alive and well and on Earth. He was not destroyed, as was previously thought. He is, in fact, a god which can, you know, or a type of deity to his worshippers on Earth as well, because their worship fuels him and recreates him, sort of. And he's been chilling in a volcano. his own personal jacuzzi.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, poor Clea here ran right into him.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, this is very Clea-centric, don't you think? These two issues.
Oh, yeah.
7 and 8 specifically, listeners.
Yep, they really spotlight her and then show her in a pretty positive light and, you know, not just a damsel in distress, which is nice.
Yeah, she's even more than a sidekick to Doctor Strange at this point because she saves him mm-hmm. at multiple points during this storyline. And, of course, we won't wrap up the storyline this time around. I mean, we're firmly smack in the middle of what's happening here. But, yeah, so yeah. We'll wrap it up, you know, in a month's time when we come back to discuss Doctor Strange again. But, you know, we'll leave the listeners on a bit of a cliffhanger like Steve and Jean did with us when they did this story. But, yeah, Clea, definitely the most valuable player here, I believe, the MVP. Because without her, Strange would have been toast.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, he would have been in big trouble. So, yeah, kudos to Clea.
Yeah, and good on the creative team for, you know, spotlighting mm-hmm. her a little bit. Because back then, not a lot of female characters headlining stories. Maybe you'd have, like, Black Widow popping up, Moondragon at this point in time. But they weren't really... I mean, the stories centered around them sometimes. But they weren't established as the... you know, the VIPs of the story at all. So
yeah, no. Mm-mm.
So, but, you know, we've always been Clea fans, and this is, you know, great, you know, seeing her back again, because the previous stories did not, I mean, you know, Silver Dagger, that featured her very much in the victim role, that story.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So here she's also showing off her sorcerer's might. And Billy, I'm going to be doing the synopsis for issue 7. You're going to be doing issue 8. So mm-hmm. let me give us some details here about the issues. Mm-hmm. Of Doctor Strange, Volume 2, Issue 7 was published in April of 1975. Editor-in-Chief was Marv Wolfman. Cover artist, Gil Kane, John Romita, and Danny Crespi. And mm-hmm. this one's got a great title to the story, Demon Fever.
Yeah, it's a good one.
And, of course, written by Steve Englehart, penciled by Gene Colan, inked by John Romita, which is rare for a Doctor Strange comic, actually, right, Billy?
Yeah, oh, for sure.
I mean, he's notoriously known as a heavy inker, right? And he changes everything into the Marvel style. But here, well, there's some, you know, panels you can see that it's not completely Gene Colan-esque. But I'd say for the most part, Colan still comes through strongly.
Mm-hmm.
And then lettered by Tom Arkowski, colored by Phil Rachelson, and edited by Len Wein. All right, so, mm-hmm. Of course, this can be found in the Doctor Strange Epic Collection, I think Volume 2, mm-hmm. which has recently been released. Not recently, I guess 6 months ago, who knows? I mean, that's recent for me, but...
yeah, earlier this year, yeah.
Yeah, but you can also read it in the Doctor Strange Masterworks or on the Marvel Digital app or Comixology. And there's lots of places to find this. This won't be hard to track down. Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. Billy, great story. Now, I'm quickly going to give the synopsis and I'm going to ask you your thoughts. Okay, mm-hmm. Demon Fever. Clea is confronted by Dormammu in the volcano that we mentioned. And Dormammu explains that he survived his last battle against the Avengers and the Defenders during that whole... Loki and the Eye of Power debacle, and he's been living off the heat from the core of the Earth to enhance his powers. However, interference by Mother Nature, who could possibly be the mother of Thor, causes Dormammu to temporarily flee. While in the Dark Dimension, Doctor Strange battles the hordes of Umar, led by her general Orini. And during the fight, Strange is defeated, and his captors then attempt to drain his mystical power through the Quaranthic Guardian, which we've seen before. Mm-hmm. Back on Earth, though, Clea seeks the aid of other mystics to help stop Dormammu, but they all cry off. After fighting off an attacking group of Dormammu worshippers, Clea travels to the Dark Dimension to retrieve Doctor Strange, but upon arriving there, she's shocked when Orini reveals himself to her as her father. So mm-hmm. just a quick one there. So Billy, what did mm-hmm. you think about this whopper of a tale?
I like this one quite a bit. You know, like we just said as we were getting into things here, that Clea, you know, is shown as a pretty tough cookie here, and I do like that. And like you said too about the artwork, you know, Romita does do more of a house style, but I do like the way this this issue looks visually. It's pretty cool. Like, you even start with the opening splash page there, the Demon Fever, and that's really good. You know, it's Clea reaching out on like the precipice of this volcano, and these insane looking demons are coming after her. Like, really, really cool. I do enjoy it quite a bit.
Yeah, I mean, I'm loving the art. The cover by Gil Kane, not so much. I mean, I usually love his covers and not his interiors, but this cover, I don't know. He makes Doctor Strange look like a vampire or like, I don't know, a werefox or something. It's just the way that he draws, or like Wolverine, actually. You know, now, Doctor Strange does have a hairstyle that lends itself to that kind of a look, right, Billy, on the cover. Sorry. I'm talking about issue 8 here. Oh, dude. Apologies. I was at the wrong issue. Sorry, I'm already jumping the gun here, jumping ahead.
Mm-hmm.
Sorry, the cover to issue 7 features Umar and Doctor Strange being carried by these little demons.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, no, this cover is great, though. I dig this cover. This is definitely going to be my favorite cover of the two. Umar looks prettier than she does in the interiors because she's drawn to be very plain, you know, very like folksy type of sorceress in the by Jean Colan. But here, she looks hot. She's stunning. And then these little demons with this hellfire burning beneath. Now, this looks like it could be the interior of the volcano, right, Billy, rather than the dark dimension.
Right. Yeah, it does.
Yeah, but you know what? It doesn't matter. Covers usually, you know, mislead us, and I don't care. I'm so used to it now.
Yeah. And, they really reflect what's going on inside.
That's right. And a story called Demon Fever should have. I mean, if you plaster the title of the story on the cover page, it should have some fiery effects on the cover, I think.
Yeah.
So, a great cover. What do you think of this cover?
Oh, I love it. Yeah. It's, you know, Strange is, like, prone, and these demons are carrying him off. They almost remind me of those little maniac demon guys a little bit from, the issue where it was the corpulent one and those little demon guys were his, like, minions there.
Yeah,
we're still in Marvel Premiere. Yeah, that a little bit.
Yeah, they look similar. You're right. They look similar. I like the fact that, okay, they remind me of, do you remember the David Cronenberg horror movie, The Brood? Those rage children, those rage babies that came from the mom. Oh, my goodness. Their heads look similar. You know, but obviously their color scheme's totally different, but scary.
Yeah, so they look cool though, and they are definitely Comic Code approved because they are wearing like a grass skirt, so their genitals and arse aren't hanging out.
This type of loincloth, probably ripped from the fur of some hell beast.
Code approved demons.
Yeah, you don't see any butt cracks, demonic butt cracks in this shot. Yeah.
Yeah, no demonic dongs or anything.
Yeah. Well, I'm sure, you know, one of the little kids will draw the dong in there like they did in one of your back issues there, Billy.
Yeah, maybe, yeah.
Damn. Oh, man, it's funny. And then when you get to the opening splash page of this issue 7, then you see even better demons as rendered by Colan and inked by Romita. Look at the one drooling. Yeah, jeez, you've got one drooling on the lip of this volcano. Oh, it's stunning.
We'll be back after a quick break.
Ever wish you could sip cocktails and discuss great books with your friends while hanging out in a rundown piano bar? Here on the Literary Guys podcast, that's what we do. I'm Dr. Gordon McCallan.
And I'm author Zachary Kellyan. Each month, we discuss books from two different views of modern masculinity.
From both a gay
and a straight perspective.
From To Kill a Mockingbird
to future governors in the jungle trying to kill a predator. We welcome everyone to join our conversation on the good and toxic of what literature and pop culture have to say about masculinity. So pour yourself a drink and join us now for Season 3.
Literary Guys. That's G-U-I-S-E. LiteraryGuys.com.
I see what you did there.
Hey, looks like he's staring at Clea's bum there while he's drooling. I'm like, okay, settle down.
Yeah, damn. These horny demons. It really looks like that. And, you know, you've got this, the title Demon Fever again, and it looks like it's bleeding into this volcano, almost as if the volcano has some kind of a gravity effect that sucks in the lettering. It's great. So, well,
it's melting it or something. Yeah.
Oh, it's melting, yeah. So Tom Arkowski did a fantastic job on that, on the lettering here.
Yeah.
And I like the fact that it opens up with a bit of a quote from, or an excerpt taken from one of the scrolls of the Ancient One. And Clea, disciple to the mystic master, did voyage upon the astral plane to the center of the earth at the plea of a spirit who sobbed in the night. That's Mother Nature sobbing in the night. It's true. And Clea was there set upon by demons and worse. Whoa.
Yeah.
This sounds almost biblical, right? Biblical.
Oh, yeah. And then you turn the page and there's Dormammu's like fiery head and starts like smack talking at her. It's great. I love it.
Oh, it's stunning. And he gives her a quick rundown of his recent adventure to seek revenge against the Scarlet Witch and the Vision, specifically against Wanda. And then he failed at that. But and then he also gives a recount of what happened during the Avengers Defenders War when he was sucked into the evil eye.
That yeah, great story.
That, oh, great story. Fantastic. I don't think we did we cover it? No, we didn't. We never covered that, right?
No, no, no. You figure, yeah, he's that's not like Doctor Strange is in it, but it's a Defender. So we'll get there eventually. We have a you know something else we're discussing about the Defender. So we'll get there eventually. Yeah, we'll get there eventually.
Excellent, excellent. Yeah, I think we briefly mentioned the storyline during our Vision and Scarlet Witch episode. You know, Forbidden Kisses. Yeah. Because that featured some great Vision and Wanda moments. And then, you know, you've just got a lot of talking, but it's interesting, right? It's not boring in the least because it's all great art. Dormammu's just explaining about how he's able to come back from the dead. Essentially, he is truly immortal, right, Billy? He is, as long as he has worshippers in the Dark Dimension or on Earth, which he does, he will be reborn through this, you know, demiurgic power that he has, that he gleans from his worshippers. And then Umar also assisted him. This time around, Umar's still firmly in the role of second stringer to Dormammu, and she's also a willing servant. Later on, we'll see her become more of her own woman and try to rule the Dark Dimension, you know, against the will of Dormammu. But this time around, she's still following her brother along.
Yeah, I mean, one thing about this issue, too, I did want to mention is I feel like Englehart was throwing a little some innuendo in here, some adult humor, because on a few different occasions, Dormammu talks about how he hasn't reached his full growth yet, or he's talking about a volcanic eruption. I'm like, okay, calm down.
Yeah,
Englehart was being a well, smarty pants.
It's possible because he's put in so many, you know, references and innuendos in previous issues that you can't put that past him, right, Billy? It's possible, you know, and the fact that he's going to erupt from a volcano, you know, already, like, that's a little bit phallic in some ways, but we don't know, you know, but because he's never gone on record stating that, but the previous things that he did, you know, obviously referred to, right, religious symbolism and all of that, he's gone on record as saying, yes, I did this on purpose. But yeah, I'm pretty sure. I mean, the veiled drug references in previous issues, that's already like cause for suspicion. So and then, you know, we've got a bit of action too, because after Dormammu, you know, after he's done explaining himself, he sets the demons upon Clea, and she can't hold them back, but then she's assisted by Mother Nature, because after all, Dormammu's on Mother Nature's turf, so she still has some power, even though she's being drained slowly by Dormammu. She causes this eruption, which another eruption, right? So this is explained as lancing a boil, which I think is a great
gross.
Yeah, it's gross, but it's great imagery, because Dormammu's a boil on the surface of Mother Nature's butt, and she's gonna lance that boil, and she does so, and she manages to chase him back into the volcano because he says he needs to clog the wound. Ew! So this is the boil fighting back here, and then, you know, Clea manages to break free from the demons. Then we cut back to the Dark Dimension, right, Billy? Because Doctor Strange, after all, he wants to get to the root of the evil, and he sees that as being located in the Dark Dimension. After all, Umar drew him away, you know, in issue six. So This was all part of their plan to lure Doctor Strange away while Dormammu is slowly gestating on Earth without Doctor Strange's mm-hmm. knowledge. So he's in the Dark Dimension and he's being observed here by Umar and Dormammu's right-hand man, or Orini, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Now, this is, I think, a great issue for the fact that it also explains to us why Clea didn't want to return to the Dark Dimension in previous issues.
Yeah.
It's not because she's afraid. It's because she... It's because of a family squabble, really, essentially, right, Billy?
Yeah.
Because, like I teased in the synopsis, Orini is Clea's dad.
Yeah.
And that's kind of a big reveal, because he has been Dormammu's right-hand disciple since time out of mind. And it's been, hard for Clea to break free from his hold on her, and also from the religion of Dormammu. So it's kind of like what would you equate it to? A Mormon running away from Mormonism, or someone who leaves their entire life behind, family, faith, everything, to escape. Or you could equate it to many different religions or cults. Or
I was just gonna say somebody getting away from Scientology.
Okay, yeah. Apparently, that's a lot easier than we might think. yeah. These celebrities, man, Travolta, Cruz. I'm Jeebus. Looking at you guys. Come on, leave this alien BS to the to L. Ron Hubbard and get out of there.
Yeah. So, like you said, that last page is cool. It reveals that's Arini's her father, and she says, and Steven's like, "What? Your father?" And he's like, she says, "Yeah, the reason I would not accompany you," he said, "I broke my people's law when I dared to aid you against Dormammu, and I broke my father's heart when I dared to love you."
Yeah. Wow. Those are good lines, man. Those are really filled with pathos and. Yeah, it's pretty heart-rending if you think about it. It's really set up to be like a Clea sort of having to extricate herself from this tangled web of love and family and devotion and duty and faith, of course. And that's hard, Billy. I mean, for anybody, that would be hard to do. So, but, there's some great scenes of Umar, fantastic colon art here, where Umar and Doctor Strange battle it out, 3 or 4 pages worth.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, Strange is defeated. They sort of team up against him, Orini and Umar, and she sort of cheap shots him. But also because Strange has a plan. Again, he's got a plan within a plan within a plan. Because the Ankh that now appears on his forehead whenever he's in danger, whenever his life is threatened, he can sort of use that to predict the outcome of events. So... Right. He's been using the Ankh to sort of peer into the future of how this battle's going to go. So he knows he's not going to die. That's why he allows himself to be defeated. But then this caused him some trouble, right? Because they place him beneath the Quaranthic Guardian, which I don't think he completely anticipated. Although he makes it work for himself later on, right, Billy? In issue 8. But the Quaranthic Guardian, we've seen that before, very Ditko-esque monster. Ditko designed it. It's capable of draining your magical energy and your knowledge and storing it in the Dark Dimension, adding it to Dormammu's, bank of power. Yeah. And that's what they do. They place Steven, the unconscious Doctor Strange, beneath the Quaranthic Guardian, who's this giant green monolith-like looking guy with one eye, similar to a mindless one, decked out in stone armor.
Yeah.
And then they commence to suck out his knowledge. And then, Clea, we cut back to Clea and Wong. So, Billy, what happens here? They're having this bit of a chat about how's Doctor Strange faring. And Clea's very blunt. Badly, Wong. Badly.
Yeah, that's too funny.
Yeah.
But and Steven getting zapped there. That's a really cool panel, man.
Oh, I love that panel, man. It also looks a little bit ominous because, you've got them taking... First, you get a bit of a look at the Dark Dimension, which is always fun. These floating platforms. Sometimes they look, made of energy, but sometimes they look as if it's floating pieces of dirt connected with these veins, which could be roots or actual veins.
And,
And then they place him beneath this Quaranthic Guardian. And then he starts blasting Steven. But you can't see Steven. You just know that this is happening. So, right. Great. Yeah, you're right. Great ominous paneling there.
Yeah.
And then you've got Clea trying to seek help from other sorcerers. She's not contacting the Scarlet Witch or Dr. Voodoo or anybody of that ilk. No, no, no. She's contacting these unknowns, these C-listers.
These bush leaguers.
Yeah. What's she doing?
Rama Khalif.
Yeah, Rama Khalif, the scared Arabian dude. He's scared, too. He's scarred and scared. Yeah. Mm-hmm. He says, I can do nothing for you, Clea. You know, I would just hamper your efforts. And then the aged Genghis. But Clea says, his wisdom, though, is hidden in senility. So no help from that quarter, Clea.
And she runs into some of Dormammu's followers and starts zapping the crap out of them, which I like.
Yeah, but we got to mention who's leading them. The drug addict called Horse.
The junkie, yeah.
The junkie. Drug addict Horse. We've seen him a couple of times. He popped up in the park when the Doc and Clea was taking a stroll in issue 6. He's been in previous issues, too. He's kind of like he's a drug addict hanging around Central Park and Greenwich Village sometimes, and then he also serves Umar.
Yep.
And he's got some sorcerer's knowledge, you know, but he's leading the cult on Earth. And they attack, but they look like some crazed monks, right? Wielding crosses or something.
Yeah, some kind of clubs or something, yeah.
That's right, and they attack the Sanctum Sanctorum. Are they absolutely nuts? Yes, they are. Clea just blasts the heck out of them. But that doesn't stop Colin from drawing these panels of these crazed monks in these robes running around with these clubs. That's great.
Typical day in New York City there.
Oh, it's fun, man. Yeah. Yeah,
let's get real.
Don't piss off the New York Buddhist contingent or you know, the friars from a nearby old chapel. And they routed by Clea. She manages to scatter them to the four winds because they're nothing compared to her sorcerer's might. But then Doctor Strange's Eye of Agamotto is warning him, the Ankh again on his head in the dark dimension where he's lying, it's warning him that he's in dire danger. And the only thing he can do is, now that his knowledge is being, absorbed or seeping away, he has to resort to the Eye, which seems to be his go-to, you know, or his last-ditch weapon that he sometimes
last employs. Resort, yeah.
So the Eye again detaches itself and floats around, blocks the light of the Coranthi Guardian, and it stops Doctor Strange from turning into a complete vegetable, right, Billy? He's not completely brain dead here, but he has lost all of his sorcerer's knowledge and power. So, but at least he's still cognizant, he can think, the Eye saved him. It would have been nice if he used that sooner, but after all, he was unconscious, so he probably couldn't. And then by this time around, though, Umar has returned to Earth in the volcano, and she gives a full report, a debriefing to Dormammu, who's still chilling in this volcano. And they're thinking Strange is dead at this point in time already, because he's been beneath the Quaranthi Guardian for quite a while.
Yeah.
But then as Doctor Strange leaves, or tries to leave, he can't because he doesn't remember how, right, Billy? And this is upsetting because now, again, Steven's been depowered. I don't like it when he's been depowered, but damn, it puts him in some hairy situations, which is fun to read. Like, how's he going to escape this one? I mean, he's like Mr. Miracle at this point in time. He's the master escape artist. Without his powers, he can still overcome these godlike entities just using his smarts, his wits.
Yeah. Yeah, and then he's a good bluffer, too. He'd be a good poker player. His bluff is pretty good.
Yeah, oh damn, definitely. I mean, he thinks two steps ahead. I'm thinking more also a chess player, but yeah, a poker player, definitely. Orini shows up with those little demons, which now resemble the Unmen, you know, from Swamp Thing, from Dr. Anton Arcane's little grotesques. You know, they resemble the Unmen, to me, at least, in this one.
Well, yeah, the one even looks like Man-Thing almost in that one page, oh, there, page yeah. 30 behind Harini there. It looks like Man-Thing yeah, back in the way.
That's right. I see that. A miniature version of Man-Thing.
Yeah, and I like Harini too. He's jacked up, man. He looks like he hits the gym every day.
This dude, wow. He's an old guy, bald, giant mm-hmm. beard, Santa Claus-esque, but yeah, he's buff. He's cut.
Mm-hmm.
This guy, he's heavy set and you know, body builds in his free time, you know, in the dark dimension or something, because, and he's got this weird ass mask, right, Billy, but it works. I mean,
yeah, it's crazy looking, but I like it. Yeah.
You better not stand too close to him, because if he turns his head, he'll stab your eye out with that mask.
Yeah.
And, you know, he is going to kill Doctor Strange now. But Doctor Strange stalls him by trying to convert him to not to a different religion, just convert him to rationality. You're slaves. You're in a cult, says Doctor Strange. You're worshiping a demon, not a god. Come on, turn back to the light. All of that stuff.
Yeah, he monologues, and then just in the nick of time, here comes Clea.
That's right. Orini's having none of this, right? This is like talking to a complete, you know, religious nut. It's like someone who's so deeply inured in fundamentalism, you can't budge them, right, Billy? Like, Doctor Strange has this whole, you know, gives this whole oration, and then Orini just keeps saying, no matter! And then another time, enough! You know? And then
he finally takes off that funky helmet and shows his face, and that's when, you know, Clea finally admits who it is, and the doc is like, what?
Yeah, exactly. Like, she seems surprised. She didn't know that Dormammu's right-hand man was her dad. She suspected, yeah. but while she was growing up in the dark dimension, it was very much like a secret identity kind of thing, I think, where her dad, you know, moonlighted as Dormammu's disciple. And because she says when he takes off the mask, even now I had hoped, you know, that, so obviously she's saying it had hoped that this was not him. Yeah. But it is, and he scolds her for not being a dutiful daughter, and then Doctor Strange is doubly surprised. He's like, daughter? You're his daughter? And then she reveals to Stephen the reason she wouldn't come to the dark dimension. Now, Billy, the ending of this issue is great. They're at the mercy of Orini and the demons of the dark dimension. And then the teaser for the next issue, in 60 days, the eternal eruption.
That's awesome.
Oh, yeah. But we've got Dormammu and Umar showing up in giant size Avengers, you know, between this issue and the next. So, you know, they will have an adventure on Earth. Woe be it that Marvel editorial won't take advantage of them, you know, showing up on Earth again. They want to make them, you know, obviously a part of the greater, you know, scheme of things as well. So I'm glad they did that, because that issue of Giant Size of Avengers is pretty good.
Yeah, I love the Doc's last little soliloquy there. Gods, and I cannot protect us either. Clea has joined me in death.
This is very dramatic. Over dramatic. Yeah.
That's great.
Luckily, old Orini, he still has a soft spot for his daughter, so don't worry too much, Steven. But yeah, Steven's like, he's got a flair for drama.
Oh, yeah, it's great. For sure.
It's really great. So, you know, the next one, though, I just quickly want to mention, Billy, before we get into the next issue, Giant Size Avengers, Volume 1, Issue 4. That's the one that you and I discussed the last time. That's the one featuring the dual wedding of the Vision and the Scarlet Witch and the Swordsman and Mantis. We talked about that during our Vision and Scarlet Witch episode a couple of months back. And, you know, basically, Dormammu is on the cover as well. You know, I think the cover artist was Gil Kane that time. And it features the wedding and then Dormammu erupting from this volcano. Now, on the wedding, that's even, you know, double the innuendo there. And then, you know, basically the storyline just entails Dormammu, you know, trying to get revenge on, like we mentioned earlier, the Scarlet Witch and the Vision for their role in the Evil Eye, you know, Defenders, Avengers War storyline.
That's also a Steve Englehart, you know, driven story, and it's absolutely insane because, you know, you have Dormammu showing up there, which doesn't make a whole lot of sense, really, with the story that had been going on up until that point. It's kind of weird. And Kang's running around, and the swordsman's actually dead, and it's a Kotati entity marrying Mantis that looks like the swordsman. It's insane. Englehart was still really puffing on some wild plants there.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, it's not, you know, all is not what it seems. I mean, this the entity that marries Mantis, the swordsman, let's call him the swordsman entity, he's purple. Yeah. He's a purple glowing being all this time. And
it's crazy.
Yeah, it's insane. And you know, just a couple of issues earlier, Mantis had been throwing herself at the Vision, wanting some android loving, but you know, and now suddenly she's firmly back, and not, it's not even the swordsman. So that
no,
that probably explains.
Yeah, it's crazy.
No, it's crazy, but that probably explains why, because the swordsman was getting pretty clingy there, right, Philippe, at one point in time. But yeah, it's nuts. Steve Englehart, man, he went, you know, crazy sometimes with his storylines, but it all works for me. It all worked out.
Yeah.
You know, if it's crazy, it's good. If it's well, if it's not crazy and well-written and serious like his Batman stuff later on, it's also good, you know, when he went to DC. So yeah, good on Steve for firing on all cylinders, whatever he's smoking.
Yeah, for real.
So, Billy, you want to give us some details about this issue and then the synopsis? This is specifically, of course, issue 8 of Doctor Strange.
Yeah, like this one, it's a little bit some, you know, a little bit different specs on this one. It was June 1975 was the cover date, but then we had Tom Palmer back on inks, know, the longtime collaborator with Gene Colan, and then Tom also as the colorist, and then John Costanza as letterer. But, you know, everything else same as the first issue, Englehart story, Gene Colan pencils. But, yeah, this one's called Rites of Passage. I'll just get right into it here. So, picking up after last issue, the Doc and Clea are surrounded by Orini and his demonic minions. Using the Cloak of Levitation, they escape and find a place to hide, a.k.a. Clea's bedroom from when she was a child. Her and Steven are then contacted by Gaia and concoct a plan to set Steven's mystical power back and thwart Umar and the dread Dormammu. They surmise that Gaia can help them along with some pagan magic Clea can conjure up. So they don a Rambo-esque headband and prepare to battle the Mindless Ones.
Oh my goodness. You know what? I love this issue, and one thing I kept coming back to is what you mentioned, Clea's room. They temporarily seek some shelter in her old room as a girl. Now, the room is freaky. Everything about the Dark Dimension is alien-looking and freaky. Nothing looks like we would, like anything we could even, you know, glom onto, right, Billy, as humans. Everything looks completely other. But then they find this little doll that Clea used to play with. And this, Billy, correct me if I'm wrong, but this looks like something out of Todd Browning movie, you know, like Freaks. It looks like one of, who would give that to a child to play with? Obviously.
Well, and then look at the shirt the little doll is wearing. It looks like almost like the same pattern as Charlie Brown's shirt.
Oh yeah. Yeah, this is their version of Charlie Brown, except he's a Todd Browning Charlie Browning.
Something crazy, yeah. It's like, what is this?
Dude, I mean, they used to call those, well, some of them showed up in Todd Browning's Freaks, the pinheads, you know, that's the derogatory term for the people with the disease that, you know, the cranial deformity there. But this looks like definitely like one of them, and it's disturbing. And Clea cuddles it and cradles it, and she says, this is what a doll I used to play with when I was a kid. And Steven just standing there looking nonchalant. He's like...
It's kind of creepy, actually. Yeah, it's weird.
It's very creepy, very creepy. Now, you know, they managed to escape the demons and Orini through the Cloak of Levitation, but Steven can't even remember how to levitate or to ask the cloak to levitate. So, you know, Clea has to do that through Clea. He hugs her, and while Steven's copping a feel there, you know, it's Clea.
Hold me tightly.
Yeah, hold me tightly. That's exactly what happens.
Yeah.
You are powerless. He's got his... I did not know.
His hands on her chest there, it looks like, as they're levitating. That's I'm like, whoa.
That's what I'm saying. I mean, look at him even hugging her in the first panel of that page, which is page two, right? Now, this is more Colin and Palmer. This is the kind of stuff I like. I mean, you can see from the very first page of Rites of Passage, you can see this is Tom Palmer. This is Tomb of Dracula style. They're back, the team of Tom and Jean. And then, you know, they levitate out of there, like Billy, and then they go to hide in Clea's room, and then she discusses her childhood with her father. The doll. The doll.
It's almost like that time when Stephen was like, this lizard means everything to me, and he's holding it and fondling it. She's the same thing with this doll. She's like, this doll means everything to me.
Yeah, and then Stephen's trying to get going here. He's trying to form a plan, but Clea says, no, Stephen, let me float on the seas of memory a while, to younger times. Mm-hmm.
So she
just wants to reminisce here, but oh, man, these are some great panels by Colin and by Tom Palmer.
And here's one of my favorites. And then when the memories are over and they come back to reality, and she's saying about recent events, she says about coming to Stephen's realm, and then says, then I forsook all that I was, daughter, princess among slaves, to become a woman with you.
She likes to, she loves to reference the fact that she becomes a woman. This is like the third time by my counting, right, Billy? During the very first issue of Volume 2, Doctor Strange Volume 2, she referenced that, you know, you make me feel like such a woman, you know? And she did that in Marvel Premiere, you know, in Steven's arms, I feel like such a woman. You know, what is this, Steve? I mean, was Steve listening to a lot of soul, a lot of blues? You make me feel like a natural woman. What's that, Aretha Franklin? I don't know what he was listening to. But this is pretty insane. And then, you know, you've got Mother Nature, the creepster, showing up again in the dark dimension, this time around with her typical Clea.
Yeah. Jeez, man, and the way Jean draws her, she's ugly as hell, too.
Dude, at this point in time, she looked like Samara from The Ring. You know, that horror movie. Damn. An older version.
Yeah.
And then, you know, you've got her begging them for help because she's at, you know, at the end of a rope, Mother Nature is. Dormammu's sucking her dry. And then you've got Umar on Earth talking to Dormammu, and he says Umar has to help him tie up some loose ends. You know, he says, destroy the sniveling addict horse who failed to kill Clea. Damn. Mm-hmm. And then Umar pulls a Thanos there with a snap of her fingers, right? She's out of there.
Mm-hmm. Okay. This is nasty, too, this scene with this guy.
Damn, this is nasty. Old horse sporting this Mr. T jewelry chain, sitting wherever he is, drinking, reading a paper.
Yeah, his Mr. T starter set here. He's got like a gold chain there.
Smoking a cigar, chilling.
Telling her all about how he got lost in smack. And then he tries to like put the moves on her.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say.
With her. She slaps him away like, get lost, chump. And then she pulls out this giant needle.
Yeah. Dude, this is the worst
death
that you could imagine for a horse. Basically, going to shoot him up with like magical smack or something.
So
magical
much
junk.
That it's going to kill him, like OD him, yeah.
Yeah, and he says, no, not this, not this. I told you, I licked it. This is like the worst death he could imagine because he sets a lot of store in himself. You know, he got his identity back. He got his self-confidence back by beating the addiction, right, Billy? And now she's going to make him die by the addiction from...
It's crazy.
Oh, man, this is a bad day.
And then we jump scenes right back to the dark dimension, and Orini walking around holding his mask in this crazy, like, position that the mask looked like it's watching these idiot mindless ones just slap each other around and break dance and act like a bunch of morons. I don't know what they're supposed to be doing there.
Yeah, they almost look like they're puppets whose strings have been cut. Right, Billy, just dangling there, right?
Yeah, like they're breakdancing or something. It's ridiculous. And then he's walking and holding the mask, and the mask looks like, it almost looks a little Dr. Fate, Helmet of Naboo-ish, and the eyes look like they're squinting at the mindless ones.
Yeah, that's a good analogy there, yeah. He's walking with his mask, and then Clea shows up. Now, this is very strange to me, Billy. She shows up, and she calls him Daddy? Daddy? Mm-hmm. What? Mm-hmm. So you call people Daddy in the Dark Dimension? And then he turns around, and she sort of just wants to... I don't know what she wants to do, but she wants some closure, right, Billy? But, you know, but then, you know, it's revealed that Clea, she might have had a magical birth or something, or she might have been magically created, because Orini says, you never had a mother. You have no father now, and you never had a mother, so you have nobody here, nothing. Nobody can aid you.
It's nasty. You're being real nasty to her.
Yeah, she cries. And, you know, then she, I don't know what she was trying to do there. Was she wants to get some love from her father or a closure? I'm not sure, but she...
Some help, maybe.
Help first and foremost. He rejects her with these very harsh words, and then he sends her away. And he keeps insulting her by saying, go back to your powerless alien lover.
Man, and she does.
Yeah, she does. And then they discuss, you know, their plans. And then Doctor Strange and Clea together, they come up. But Clea's like completely enervated here. She's got no energy left. You know, she's psychologically torn here by what she spoke about with her dad. And then Doctor Strange is all business. He says, come on, we got to do this. You know, I've got a plan to get my magic back. And it involves invoking ancient rites of pagan magic. Because, after all, the worship of Mother Nature is pagan. And we need her help.
Yeah, so, it sounds like he was hanging out with Lord Summer Isle here.
Exactly.
You know, Wicker Man or something.
Exactly. But, you
and
know,
then his creepy little kid. What a little jerk.
Ooh, that little girl? Talk about Samara earlier. This is the younger version of Mother Nature here. Little Samara. Wow, you're bad peoples. My mama warned me about you are, I'm gonna tell. And she runs away when she spots them.
Oh, gonna go rat them out, yeah.
Dude, so, you know, this is, it makes a weird kind of sense, but it's also a little bit crazy and freaky, and it's also ridiculous in a certain light, if you look at it, because this is basically Doctor Strange and Clea creating a pagan worship site in the Dark Dimension so that they could... tap the power of Mother Nature to allow Doctor Strange to then attack the Quaranthic Guardian to get his magic back, right?
Yeah.
Essentially. Now, Clea's the only one who has the knowledge of invoking these pagan rites. Doctor Strange used to have the knowledge, but it's gone. Mm-hmm. So now Clea has to set up this pagan ritual.
Yo, and here we go again with this sex stuff. I'm telling you, I guarantee you, he was doing it, Englehart. Their prayer is a simple chant, but Terrell, Sylvan, the lips of man form the sounds of nature, till emotions rise and peak is reached.
Oh,
I'm telling you, listen to that.
Oh my goodness, dude, this is like, this is a tantric sex ritual, but with Steve Englehart's poetry interspersed in between, I don't know what you would call it, thrusts? Oh no, this is terrible, but you know, It is what it is. Steve was into these kind of things. I'm not going to begrudge him his little, you know, peccadillos here. But, you know, interesting.
It's funny.
It's funny. I mean, she pours water in the circle, and then they float together. It's very Swamp Thing, Abby, you know, copulation-esque issue. This is it, right? So they get together. Steven ties this headband around his head. I don't know what that's supposed to. I mean, Clea's
pull on Rambo.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yes, he's getting ready. He's gearing up. And then he throws the Eye of Agamotto into the water splashed inside the circle. And then they say, listen to this. As the Eye of Agamotto hits the circle, it says, the cosmos quivers.
And then, a peak is, and like right next to each other are these words, and a peak is reached, the cosmos quivers. Like they're literally like 2 inches apart.
Listen, we're not making this up. if any of you listeners are new to the show and you listen to the episode where we discuss Doctor Strange Volume 2 Episode 1 with them doing the picnic blanket scene, you know, on the Cloak of Levitation, Clea and the dog, you know Englehart was... I don't know. He was sexually charged or something here when he was writing Doctor Strange for some reason.
Mm-hmm. He was horny.
Damn, things were weird here. Yeah. So, I mean, think about it. The Ben Franklin issue is coming up, right, Billy?
Oh, boy. Yeah, here we go.
So, mm-hmm. Once we get there, you'll know for sure, listeners, we're not making this stuff up. Steve Englehart was a weird dude into this weird sex rituals and stuff. Mm-hmm. So, but it makes for funny reading. It makes for some fun reading. Then, you know, during this whole, pagan trance that they're in, the Mindless Ones are still battling it out, but Orini, you know, led by that little girl, tracks them down with the demons, and then he chases Clea across the sands, because this seemed to be the only sandy patch. It might even be the kid's playground or something. That's why the kid was there, you know, it's like a sand pit. They chase Clea across this white sand, and she runs, she leads them towards the Quaranthic Guardian. And then the Quaranthic Guardian still has Steven's knowledge. Now, essentially, Billy, this is interesting. She's charged up with the power of Mother Nature now through this pagan ritual. She's going to be the vessel. Okay, this sounds horrible. But yeah, she's... Okay, now, this is... Listeners, we're not making this up. Clea's going to be the vessel for Steven's essence. Seriously. And then she holds Steven's essence, because the Quaranthic Guardian in effect blasts her, right, Billy? So she absorbs Steven's essence, and this is not the first time it's happened. As you remember, this happened before during the Silver Dagger storyline, when Clea absorbed Steven's essence, right? And she absorbs his essence again, and then becomes the receptacle for his power, and then she has to release it in this orgasmic explosion. And then what happens is, oh, but the Mindless Ones get in on the orgy.
Oh yeah, they come busting in and start just blasting everywhere, and then triggers
this event, this orgasm of light. And then the Quaranthic Guardians drain dry. Clea is completely spent, but Doctor
she's
Strange,
laying there like done.
Yeah, yep. Doctor Strange's power is released, and he, you know, absorbs it into himself. And then it cuts back to Earth. You know, Umar's been successful. She, you know, took out Horse. Horse, we see his dead body lying there sprawled. And this is horrible, because they say, like, somewhere in the pale Manhattan dawn, a junkie's leg shudders.
Wow.
Holy God.
Yeah, okay, no mercy.
Steve was on fire when he was writing these issues, man. And then, you know, there's this great bit where Mother Nature is appealing to Umar, because she's fading away. She's trapped in these mystical bands, and Dormammu's still absorbing her power. And she appeals to Umar as a woman. She says, Umar, he be so much larger than even I now. At last, he moves to be free. Whatever else thou art, woman, you know. And then Umar says, I, spirit, a woman? And then Dormammu just laughs. Umar, a woman? Ah, ha, ha, ha. What?
Oh, he loves it. Yeah, he's like, what?
That anybody would think of her as a woman. Just, give, you know, lets him, you know, descend into these fits of laughter. And then Doctor Strange is now on the warpath, because he sees Clea is completely, you know, knocked for a loop, and she's lying there. And... you know, but Doctor Strange is still not completely, you know, with it, right? Even though his power's been released.
No.
Because the power is still contained within Clea a little bit, you know? Mm-hmm. And so, you know, until Doctor Strange can get it back, Clea is now the Sorceress Supreme. So she releases this power, and then she mentions, she says, Steven, I never realized how much power you wield. This is too much for me to bear. I can't hold it, right? What is Englehart doing?
More of the sex stuff. All right, the bolt of bedevilment should halt their advance. Oh, Steven, it's so weird. Sorcery just pours out of me.
Yeah. It's strange. It's strange. Are we reading too much into this?
Great.
Maybe, but at this point in time, no, I think
way.
Englehart's got us on this bone train. And we can't get off. And then, you know, Orini starts to release his magic, but it's nothing. Clea just, you know, wipes him away, right? She just
He tries to like blast the dock, I think, and she jumps in between them and says no, and the blast just hits her, and it does hurt her, but 2 seconds later she's just really pissed off and is like, you know,
That's
she's
right.
Like, I think she's going to go to town and kill her own father. And the doc's like, Clea, stop.
Yeah, she was going to use the flames of the Faultine to basically burn him to death. But Doc says, yeah. No, Clea, no, my power is not anti-life. You know, meaning
whoa, wait a minute.
Wait a
is
minute.
Is he reading some fourth world there?
this was during the time when Kirby was, you know, he stirring up just, the industry with
yeah,
that
was just about done. But yeah, he was just about wrapping up in 75 because he was coming back to Marvel, I think, the next year, wasn't he?
yeah. So, yeah, just put the equation in there and then we've got a lawsuit on our hands. But, you know, no, they were not as bad then. But no. Interesting, right? And then he stops Clea. So he immediately gets he realizes Clea can't hold the power too long. So he says we must become one. We must touch our brows together. So they link their minds by touching their foreheads against each other, and then his power transfers back from Clea into him. And then we've got this ominous scene where Dormammu is now enjoying his torture of Mother Nature. She's almost completely absorbed, but. He says, listen to her spirit scream. Wow, that's a pretty rough panel there, right, Billy, to look at. It looks like he's torturing a woman, essentially. He's torturing Mother Nature. This is kind of like, I don't know, this is horrible, but it's kind of like the rape of Mother Nature, right, Billy? Because
it's really bad, because all that's left is like her head now.
Yeah, and he is...
Like her whole body's like encased in this like energy that's like, killing her basically, so it's nasty
this
looking.
Is Alan Moore-esque stuff, you know, I'm telling you, because Dormammu's like in the earth, right? He's halfway, only his upper torso is visible, right? And he's inside the earth. It's horrible. He's in this volcanic crevice, so I don't know, this the insinuations here are horrible. And then at the end of the issue, Clea tosses away her doll before they head back to Earth, and they're off to save Mother Nature now. Steven's back to full strength, but then we see this final fantastic panel of Dormammu clawing his way out of this crevice. And then next issue, consummation. So, Billy, what does that mean? What is consummation? What I mean, this whole issue is sexually charged, you know?
With the page before. You just said about listen to the spirit scream, and there's Mother Earth screaming.
Oh, yeah.
He says that, and the next planet, and the next panel, as her planet splits asunder at my coming.
Yeah, exactly.
Come on, man.
I mean, Engelhard, how you? He's it's pretty on the nose, right? He's like laying it out here from A to Z. Uh-huh. There's no doubt what he's doing here, I believe. So this is
very sexual. Yeah,
it's the whole issue. I mean, it's horrible what he's implying here. I mean, in the dark dimension and on Earth, what is happening? You know. At least in the dark dimension, it was like an act of love between Steven and Clea, right? Sort of.
Mm-hmm.
But here, it's definitely a violation, you know, on Earth. So this is very disturbing two issues. We shouldn't have laughed about it. It just, the reason I'm injecting some humor in here is because Engelhardt is so, you know, he's such an odd kind of mind, you know. He's such a weird kind of writer that he puts these things in a comic read essentially by kids, and kids don't know what they're reading. But you know, if an adult picks up this comic, hey, what you reading? They just have to read a couple of lines to see all these words that are normally used in what do you call it, like porn fiction or what, like, you know,
like one of those like slutty romance novels at the grocery store in the checkout line.
Exactly. So I don't know, man. It's weird. But so terrible what's happening to Mother Nature here, and terrible the implications of it is definitely terrible. But you know, Engelhardt could also equate that to, you know, the pollution of the environment as a kind of
violation by mankind. That's what I was gonna say. He was a very much, I don't know that I've ever heard him talk about that specifically. I'm sure he has at some point in the, you know, dozens of interviews he's done and things. I kind of think there might be a little bit of that too. He's kind of, you know, equating, you know, some of mankind's treatment of the earth with Dormammu and Gaia.
Yeah, definitely. But the fact that, you know, she is presented as a woman, and that the torture is clearly happening to her in her female form. That is very disturbing, right, Billy? So,
but it's creepy.
But whatever is doing this to her, that's up for interpretation. You know, an outside force, unnatural force, according to Engelhardt, definitely it could be pollution. It could be, you know, man's twisted nature. Who knows? But
I mean, it's not in bad taste or anything. But yeah, I think he is shooting for something like that.
Yeah. But great two issues, Billy. This is now, you'd think that after such a monumental partnership with Frank Brenner, you'd think that Engelhardt would be floundering a bit. No, he wasn't. He was already firmly onto the next tale, which he plotted by himself this time around, of course, because he used to co-plot with Brenner at the end of their tenure together. And now, you know, he's firmly back in the driver's seat. But he's got everything laid out for the next couple of half a dozen issues, at least. And everything still meshes together nicely, I think. So he's not out, you know, he's not just floating around the breeze here. He's still got a plan for Doctor Strange, and we've got some great issues coming up. We've got some bad ones too, but, you know, more hits than misses, I would
say. Yeah, and I mean, you usually get, you know, up until certain issues, you get Gene Colan artwork, so at least there's always some, you know, pretty strong artwork in there. And then, like we've said before, after Gene Colan, there's, you know, a few different artists, you know, Starlin and Sutton, and oh, it's crazy. It gets real trippy and crazy. A few different writers, but it's, you know, there's some strong stuff.
Definitely. So, Billy, that brings us to our Marvel Bronze Age brilliance and Mighty Marvel missteps. I'll let you go first. What are your Bronze Age brilliance moments and the missteps?
So, for me, the brilliance is definitely the whole Dormammu, Umar, and then the link to Gaia. I do like how Engelhardt brought that in as a way to bring back Dormammu. And of course, I love Dormammu. He's a good smack talker because he thinks he's, you know, the greatest of all time. He's like Muhammad Ali level with the smack talk.
Yeah.
So I do like that.
That's right. He's awesome. He's Kang level, Red Skull level, you know, rant, Doctor Doom-esque ego. Yeah, definitely. You'd think that most villains, you know, become staid or boring when they all have these huge egos. But no, each of them have their own different vocabulary and different phrasing and way of, you know, presenting these egos to you. So, you know, each of the Marvel villains still remain distinct. And the DC villains too, I should say. People like Darkseid, like we spoke some Kirby earlier. Darkseid's definitely on this type of level. You know, where they've got such monumental egos that, you know, nothing could seem to deter them. Even when they lose, they justify that loss by saying it's not really a loss. Because they can't lose.
They don't take
defeat well. Yeah, so, okay, that's a good one. And what about your misstep? Was there a misstep?
The only thing I thought is, when you look at this entire story, I just think it's a bit too long. You know, it's end up going to be four issues long, which I think is a bit much. I think it could have been a little bit more condensed, like 2-3 issues tops that he could have had this story done and over with. But other than that, I'm good with it. You know, I don't know if you and I talked about this specifically too, or it was at some other point, but I know sometimes when you get Tom Palmer, when he inks and colors the issue, sometimes it's a little like, I think the issues do benefit from a separate colorist when he inks Gene. Other than that, you know, I think it's, everything's great and strong here and I love it, but that's just a little bit, you know, sometimes it's, I don't know if it's just because of the timetable, you know, maybe it's, there wasn't a lot of time to do inking and coloring, so I don't know how overworked he was at the time. You know, he was doing Tomb of Dracula, he was doing this, so he had a lot on his plate.
Yeah. Oh, I would agree with you. Yeah, that was the conversation we once had about Palmer's great on inks. He's great on colors, too, when he colors himself. But it's better to have another colorist so that he can free up more time for inking. And but it still looks great. It just looks a little bit darker, or not muddier, I should say. But, you know, the coloring sometimes a little bit muted. And if you're doing a character like Doctor Strange, or even Dracula from Tomb of Dracula, who's got some red in his cape, you need some bright coloring sometimes. But the darks definitely work for his horror stories. And, you know, so, you know, if he does color himself, it's by no means bad. But yeah, you're right.
No.
The inking team And then, you know, of course, pencils by Gene Cullen, and then a separate colorist normally works.
Yeah, so, all right, well, what do you got there for
Bronze Age Brilliance first, that's right. I should say that I like the fact that this was a very unique way for Stephen Strange to get out of this debacle, you know, like, again, he used the Eye of Agamotto, but this time around he had to rely on Clea, and he had to rely on a pagan ritual, ancient pagan magic, to channel Mother Earth, which makes sense, right? So I love this creative way that Englehart came up with Stephen having to extricate himself from this, you know, death trap in the dark dimension. And you really feel that, that Stephen's in mortal peril here, because the Ankh keeps flashing on his head. But he says that the chance he took was worth it, because the Ankh did not flash at one point in time. It did not flash, which meant that he was not in mortal danger, even though it seemed as if he was. So that's why he took that chance. So, you know, Englehart's playing with all these intricate, you know, details of the Doctor Strange mythology that he himself created and introduced. And then he uses that to make Stephen this ultimate escape artist, this Batman-esque, you know, Mr. Miracle type, who can escape from seemingly any situation, no matter how dire it seems, by using, like I say, his wits and his cunning. And also with the help of Clea, the fact that Clea was in the forefront, that made this issue fantastic for me. Clea was a part of Doc's plan. But also, she was a wild card. He didn't really know. I mean, he didn't expect her to come looking for him. And he was surprised when she showed up. And then we got a little bit of Clea's backstory as well. So all of those things. But I would say the main brilliance for me was, you know, Englehart's creative way of getting Stephen to beat the odds here. And then Mighty Marvel Missteps would be the cover that I mentioned earlier, Billy. Now, this cover is by no means bad, cover to issue 8. The cover to issue 7 is fantastic. But you know how I feel about Gil Kane? Sometimes his characters look weird to me. Like Doctor Strange on that, and the cape and the hair and the Wolverine-like look to his face. And the demons look fine. Dormammu looks weird-ish. With those green gloves with fingernails. I don't know. There's just something wrong there.
Yeah, the fingernails on Dormammu are not good. That's kind of dumb. And then Clea, she looks weird too, man. I don't know. The way he draws like her, she almost looks like she has pecs like a guy instead of boobs. She looks really weird there. Her body looks really off. And like you said, the other one, 7, looks great. Yeah. I mean, everybody looks as they should on 7. The figures all look great. There's nothing... Everything looks really good on 7. I have no critique, no nitpick on 7, but 8, there's 3 or 4 things that are just, they're just not right. And then it looks like a more of a brighter color cover too, which doesn't make sense if you're in this, you know, ominous and demons and hell dimension, but it looks very bright, like it's the middle of the day, which doesn't make any sense to me.
Yeah, I mean, the brightness could come from Dormammu's flame, but, you know, then... I don't know. Yeah, you're right. There's something wrong with this cover. It's too bright almost. You know, too many colors vying for attention there on that cover.
And then, you look at that one demon that almost looks dinosaur-like in the bottom left corner. He almost reminds me of a dire wraith.
Oh, yeah.
You know, later on in Rom. Yeah, it's weird.
That's right. Hey, good call there, yeah. Well, I mean, I love the way Gil Kane draws monsters and covers and... You know, his covers are for me, his strongest point. But, this is more like one of his interior panels, I would say, which I don't always enjoy. I don't know why. I'm just not a Kane guy. And I know that's blasphemy to some of our listeners. I'm very sorry about that.
Let's be very critical here. Look at the demon holding the club. His arm is like 6 feet long. It's like his arm is like... If you cut his arm off, it would be as tall as the demon.
Yeah.
It just looks bizarre, man.
It looks weird. I mean, it's obviously plausible because demons have weird anatomy, right, Billy? So it's plausible. But it visually it's not...
Weird, man.
It looks weird because that club is right in front of Dormammu's, chest. And then Stephen's cape is blocking Dormammu's one hand, which makes Dormammu look like something that should not be there. If you take Dormammu out, maybe the cover... would look less busy, but you know, he looks like he was inserted at the last moment or something in the background, and I don't know, it's weird. But you know, a lot of people probably love this cover. I'm just not this cover just ruined it for me a little bit.
Yeah.
That's why I wanted to get to it so fast in the beginning and completely skipped over the cover of issue 7. Right. We're going to take a short break, listeners, and then we'll be back with our shop talk. So don't go away.
Get me the chief of staff. Hello. I want to speak to the president. I'm sorry, but you'll have to interrupt him.
10 seconds. 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
All right, we're back with Shop Talk. Billy, I don't know if you've got anything. I do have something quick that I can mention for Shop Talk before we head off to the recommendations of Ragador. Do you have anything you want to talk about or mention this time around?
I do not. So what's going on with you there? I heard you mention Conan, right?
Well, I'm going to talk more Conan, yeah, when we get to the recommendations of Ragador. Definitely, we're definitely going to talk some Conan, but... you know, I recently told you I canceled Disney Plus, you know, right after finishing off Loki, because it was just too much. You know, we've got HBO Go, we've got Netflix, and then we had Disney Plus. One of them had to go. And, you know, my daughter, she's into Disney, but not as much as you think. She loves the Netflix kids shows. She loves the DC animated series and DC movies on HBO Go more than she does the Disney stuff, you know, so...
Yeah.
Basically, we decided on, you know, getting rid of Disney Plus temporarily. But, you know, now that there's this new Marvel What If, you know, animated series running, I really wanted to watch that. I haven't yet, but good news, my in-laws recently got it. And since we go over there once a month for a weekend to visit them, I'm going to catch up on my Marvel shows over there. Yeah, they're loving it. They're saying it's great. The first episode, What If Peggy Carter Was Captain America? You know, that already dropped, and everybody's raving about that. This is a fantastic episode, great animation, lots of action.
I saw the animation. It looks incredible. I couldn't believe how good it looked.
Fantastic. And Billy, you know, you and I have talked that if we ever do more segments to the show or more, you know, discussions, we would definitely do What If, because that was such a cool series of Marvel in the 70s in the Bronze Age, and we love What If. We've got some upcoming What If issues that we're going to be talking about in between talking Doctor Strange, so I want to watch that, and now I can because of, bless them, my in-laws. Literally just when we canceled Disney Plus, they picked up Disney Plus. So
nice.
Yeah, we're gonna, of course they do it, you know, through a VPN and all, but it's available like that. And it's legit, you know, you just pay for it and you get it. And of course, one of them also has an American bank account. So, you know, it's possible to get it like that, even though it's not really available in Asia yet. Formally, you kind of need to sign up as, you know, through a VPN as an American. But then they still check if it's an American credit card or not. You know, that's the only way you can sign up here. And, you know, so I'm going to be watching that this weekend. And then come next Into the Weird, I'll give, you know, you listeners who've probably already seen it, I'll give you my two cents about What If, which I'm excited for.
Cool. Oh, yeah, there is one thing I forgot to mention we can bring up during Shop Talk here. I know this is, you know, a Marvel show, but just to throw it out there, I did subscribe to the DC app, and I'm loving it. It's really cool. I really enjoy it. It's pretty good. A lot of comics on there, a lot of fun.
DC Infinite, right, Billy?
Yep, two thumbs up.
And let's plug this a little bit. There was a recent episode on the Fire and Water Network, I think it was FW Presents, where Paul Hicks, our friend, our mate from Oz over at the, you know, Waiting for Doom cast and the Gary Show, he was a guest on Fire and Water Presents, along with Shag Matthews, and they discussed DC Infinite at length, right? And it seems like a worthwhile service to get, because you've got so many comics, 20,000 worth of issues uploaded up there, so why not?
Oh, I think it's even more than that now. I think they might have 30,000. It's a lot. And it's cool, too, because you know me. I want to read all the older material, especially. And some of the older material, they'll have the complete run, and other ones they'll have like the first 10 or something like that. So like some of the old Bronze Age horror titles, I've never read like the really low numbers because those are really expensive comics to try to buy now in decent shape. So I have those at my fingertips now. So I've been checking those out and loving those, which is really cool. So yeah, thanks to Paul, who is at reading_Hicks. And then, you know, our buddy Shag, who's a, you know, obviously a huge part of the Fire and Water Network.
Yeah, one of the founders, of course. And yeah, he's got many accounts, you know, so just follow the Fire and Water Network on Twitter.
At Firestorm Fan is one of them. So
and at Firestorm Fan, that's right.
Yeah, definitely check those guys out. Awesome guys. Thank you, guys.
And then, Billy, this gives us the perfect segue to head off into, since we're talking comics on the Infinite app and others, and you mentioned Conan, we can head off into our recommendations of Ragador right after Dormammu lays some wisdom off on us. So don't go away, listeners. We'll be back.
Greetings, future slaves and serfs. It is I, the Dread Dormammu, back to introduce the recommendations of Ragador on this fine evening. Fair warning, though, there might be some interruptions as some family are staying over in the Dark Dimension. Specifically, the rambunctious offspring from my 14th marriage. But let's not get into that. It is a long, sordid tale. Before we start, and this time around, I approve of the recommendations that Ragador has sanctioned Billy and that idiot Herman to deliver, I want to mention how elated I was in seeing the recent new Spider-Man trailer. Oh, Steven really screwed the pooch in that one. I can't wait to feast my burning eyes on that highly enjoyable film, I'm sure it will be, when it finally gets released.
Dormammu, I've come to bargain.
I'm kind of in the middle of something here. What is it? Isn't it your bedtime already? It's past 10. Tomorrow's a school day. What do you need?
I want to watch Netflix.
What? You want to watch Netflix now? Are you utterly insane? I told you already. It's time to go to bed. Get a move on, quickly. Sorry about that, folks. Where were we? All right. Herman's recommendations and beliefs. Pretty spectacular, this time around.
Dormammu, I've come to bargain.
By all that is unholy, what? What is it?
Please, can I watch Harley animated series?
The Harley Quinn animated series? That thing's not for kids. No, no, forget about it. Go to bed right now. Like I said, tomorrow you have school. You gotta get up early at 6. There's no way that I can allow that. Just go. Now, where were we?
Dormammu, I've come to bargain.
What? Didn't I already tell you? No, no means no.
Dormammu, I've come to bargain.
Fine, but do whatever you want.
Yippee!
There's a lesson to be learned from this, listeners. Never give your kid a time stone. Bad idea. Really bad idea.
All right, we're back with the recommendations of Ragador. Billy, what do you have for us this week?
Okay, so speaking of, you know, we mentioned DC and the anti-life equation and all that nonsense earlier. you know, it is Jack Kirby month. A bunch of friends of ours on Twitter have kind of mapped out every month. You know, they had Western Comics in, I think it was July, and obviously February, that's Romance Comics. And, you know, there's, you know, almost like a theme for every month now. And Jack Kirby is what they're doing for the month of August. So I decided to bust out my trade that I got, I think, was it a year ago, 2 years ago? I don't know. It was fairly recent. Jack Kirby's Mr. Miracle. And it contains the entire run of Mr. Miracle, which is super cool. I'm really loving that because it's bright and it's awesome. And there's some extras in the back. And my favorite thing about it is on the spine, it shows Mr. Miracle himself at the top and then says Mr. Miracle by Jack Kirby. And in the middle, between Mr. Miracle and Jack Kirby, is a picture of Jack Kirby chomping on a stogie.
Awesome.
So I love that. That's my favorite part, the spine of that trade. It's just super cool. And I got it for like $18 too.
Fantastic.
And it's great.
Fantastic.
Crazy good artwork.
Yeah, I've been collecting lots of Kirby stuff. And there's huge Omnibuy out as well. Omnibus is collecting his things. A long time ago, I think more than 10 years ago, they started collecting the Jack Kirby Omnibus or Fourth World Omnibus series, which was you know, Omnibus series of four volumes. And that's what I got. And then I'm so happy with those. I never, you know, double dipped again. But I know that there's lots of new recent Kirby material out. And the only complaint I have with them is if you want to read the Mr. Miracle issues, you kind of have to follow the Fourth World, you know, continuity or storyline as it's laid out, you know, by the various comics, like Superman's pal Jimmy Olsen, Mr. Miracle, the New Gods, you know, the Hunger Dogs.
Forever People.
Yeah. And then later on, the graphic novel, The Hunger Dogs. So, you know, you kind of have to jump all over the place to get to just the Mr. Miracle stuff. But when you get there, of course, it's worth it. You know, I read Mr. Miracle for Big Barda. She's stunning.
Oh, yeah.
I love her. You know, I've always been a huge Big Barda fan. And, of course, Scott and Oberon and all the supporting cast, they're all great. And the villains are so kooky.
Craziness.
Oh, love it. Love it. So, Billy, great recommendation, man. I definitely can sink. I can second that. Any Jack Kirby stuff, you know, it's always worth it.
Yeah. All right.
So, Billy, for me, I have to apologize to our listeners who recommended this to us in the past because I tried something that we said we would never try. And it turned out to be the awesomeness. It turned out to be fantastic. And this specifically is what I'm going to be recommending. The new Savage Avengers series, which has been running since 2020, by Jerry Duggan as the main writer and, you know, a variety of artists. It started out with Mike Diodato Jr. And now it's covers by David Finch. And now it's Pat Zercher, whom we follow on Twitter, a great guy. And fantastic art, fantastic writing by Duggan. And this is the reason we weren't going to read this, right, Billy, is because it puts Conan in the Marvel Universe in modern day, kind of like that old What If issue. What if Conan existed, you know, in the modern day? And, you know, that's blasphemy. We hate that. I want Conan to stay in the Hyborian Age. One What If issue is fine, but no, keep him in his element. And then, you know, Paul Hicks... again, we mentioned him earlier from Waiting for Doom. He DM'd you and me, and he said, listen, look at what showed up in Savage Avengers. And it was this fantastic splash panel of Shuma Gorath and Stephen Strange. You know, obviously he's slated to be killed off, but that hasn't happened yet. He's a firm part of this comic series. And then, you know, so Paul recommended it, but I still didn't pick it up. And then Lady Strange, you know, Sorcerer Strange, one of our friends on Twitter, she recommended it to me as well. She says, wow, this is fantastic. You should read it. It's filled with Shuma Gorath. And then I told her, but, you know, Conan's in there. He's not supposed to be part of that team. I don't like it. And then she says, no, still read it. It's great. So then, you know, while I was at the comic store here in Taipei last week, I saw the three trades they've got on that. And so I picked up those three trades very cheaply, I should say. They've been on the shelves there for a long time. Nobody's been buying them. And then, Billy, that's what we got. I got Savage Avengers, the first trade, The City of Sickles, Volume 1, and then To Dine with Doom, Volume 2, and then Volume 3, Enter the Dragon. Bit of a Bruce Lee reference there, but there's nothing about Bruce Lee in that issue. It's just an Asgardian dragon. But Billy, man, there's so many great moments in this. Conan is Conan. He's the actual Conan. He's arrogant. He doesn't know what's going on, but he's in this world, this sorcerous realm, and he's just kicking ass and taking names. There's no taking prisoners here. It's still Hyborian Age Conan. He slices heads off. He severs limbs. He throws people through walls, crushes skulls. This is ridiculous. He beds multiple women, like I say. You know, it's like he falls hard for the Black Widow. And, the Marvel Universe reacts so strangely to Conan being there. They don't know what to make of him. I mean, this team is the Punisher, Dr. Voodoo, Venom, Wolverine, and Elektra, and then Black Widow shows up as well to be part of the team briefly. They don't know what to make of Conan. This guy, they don't know where he comes from. All they know is he's extremely effective. Even Dr. Doom, you know, respects Conan in this because he cannot believe what... Because, okay, basically, Billy, it's about the sorcerer Kulan Gath. You know, remember that sorcerer who fought the X-Men? Yeah. He's also fought Conan multiple times. Kulan Gath, that immortal sorcerer. He eats the dead. And then when he eats the dead, he gets the magic, you know, of that person he eats. So he's arguably as powerful as Doom and Doctor Strange. And now his plan... I'm not giving anything away. This plan has been laid out from the beginning. His plan is to eat Shumagorath, so that he can gain Shumagorath's godlike power. But since Shumagorath's stuck in the Cancerverse, Kulan-Gath, he's creating these rites, these magical ceremonies that allow avatars of Shumagorath to appear, very Starro-esque, you know? So you've got Shumagorath appearing on the head of some of these people and on Brother Voodoo at one point in time. And then he eats that avatar of Shumagorath, this miniature... octopus, starfish, you know, Lovecraftian little monster. And then he gains a bit of Shumagorath's power. Now, he wants to keep doing this until he's absorbed all of Shumagorath from the Cancerverse. And then, you know, Conan is there. He's tracked, Kulan-Gath through time, through a time rift. He's on the trail of Kulan-Gath. Doctor Strange is involved. The Punisher... Wolverine and Conan have a fantastic battle. You won't believe it. It's ridiculous, but it's so much fun. And I'm sorry. I apologize to everybody who recommended this. I should have been reading this from the start. It's great. You know, it's Doctor Strange, and they, you know, pair him with Conan. And even Doctor Strange hooks up with Elektra for a one-night stand there for a bit. So you'd love that, Billy. Whoa. It's amazing, dude. I love this. And then, you know... Conan and the Punisher become bros, you know? It's great. So, yeah, read it if you haven't, but if you have, then I apologize. I should have been reading this a long time ago.
So which is the hottest Marvel character?
Iron Man.
Ant-Man. I can't decide between Professor X and Magneto, so both.
Loki.
Is Wolverine Marvel?
What about White Tiger?
What about White Tiger?
Doc Samson.
Doc who?
Star Fox.
That's a video game.
The girls go on a journey to determine every Marvel character's hotness in Ohotmu or Not, the official handbook of the Marvel Universe podcast you didn't know you wanted. Available on iTunes and at fireandwaterpodcast.com.
All right, well, that's it for another episode of Into the Weird. Billy, I had a lot of fun, man. Thanks for joining me for this wild ride yet again.
Can't go wrong with the Doc, man. You and I both love him, so can never go wrong with sitting down and talking about some Doctor Strange.
Yeah, and there's more Doctor Strange goodness to come, so you can look forward to that, listeners. But for now, we'll leave you with our contact details. If you want to reach the show, you can send an email to sinkintotheweird@gmail.com. You can also follow our blog at www.sinkintotheweird.com. I haven't updated the blog in a while, but you know, now that I've got more time on my hands, I will update it, and there will be a podcast addendum post about this episode. And you can also follow us on Twitter. I'm at Dark Longbox, and Billy, you are at Billy Delicious.
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, listen to Billy's show, Magazines and Monsters. There's going to be an episode available there on, about a favorite horror movie of ours, too, if you want to think about it like that one. But it's one movie, and it's remake, and we're going to be talking about that. That's going to be a lot of fun.
Crazy.
That's right. But with that, Billy, we're out of here. I'll leave you with a little bit of a message. Stay weird, stay cool. Don't let Kulan Gath turn you into an avatar of Shmugorath, no matter how cool it may look, having this one eye and these tentacles coming out of your face. And don't play with little creepy dolls like Todd Browning-inspired little freakish dolls like Clea does, and then you should be fine.
For real.
So take it easy, folks. With that, bye from me.
All right, stay weird, everybody. Life was so unkind. Now you're the key to my peace of mind. 'Cause you made me feel. You made me feel. You made me feel like a natural woman. When my soul was in the lost and found, you came along to claim it.